Cha-ching. That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Today on The Grave Talks, Inside Ohio's Haunted Prospect Place Estate. A conversation with Amy Green of the G.W. Adams Educational Center. In rural Trinway, Ohio, sits the stately Prospect Place Estate, a 29-room mansion built in 1856 by abolitionist George Willison Adams. While originally constructed as a symbol of freedom and progress, today Prospect Place stands as one of Ohio's most haunted locations. Amy Green of the G.W. Adams Educational Center shares the fascinating and chilling history of the estate, from its role in the Underground Railroad to the whispers of lingering spirits. Visitors report everything from shadow figures, disembodied voices, and ghostly laughter, to the lingering scent of cigar smoke from the parlor where George Adams himself is still said to roam. Could the ghost of a bounty hunter still haunt the barn? And who is the little girl seen wandering the servants' quarters? Whether you come for the history or the haunts, one thing's for sure. Prospect Place Estate leaves a lasting impression on the living and the dead. And I want to say thank you, Amy, very much for taking the time to talk to me tonight. Now, you're with the G.W. Adams Educational Center. Now, this is also known as the Historic Prospect Place Estate?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It was actually built in 1856 and christened Prospect Place.
Now, you are the treasurer there. You also host the historic tours. You also help let people in to do paranormal investigations. It kind of sounds like whatever needs to be done, you're willing to step in and help out.
Absolutely. It's been kind of a passion for me for, oh golly, over 35 years. You know, I've learned as much as I can about it, and it's just a love affair, if you will.
Is this a place that you live nearby and you've kind of always known about it, or for a long time you've known about the Prospect Place?
Absolutely. I moved to this area in 1988, and as I was learning the roads and, you know, kind of entertaining myself, I drove out through Dresden, Ohio. Going north out of it, you cross Wacatomica Creek, and there's this grove of trees. And as you're looking through this grove of trees, this house kind of shows up. And then when you pass the trees, you see it. You see this house, and it's just been an amazing structure. And it catches your attention. It really does. And so from that moment on, I've just been infatuated with the house and just trying to learn all I can about who built it and who lived there and the things that have happened there. It's just, you know, like I said, a big passion of mine.
Can you describe what the house looks like? Because it's, you know, back in the day, it would catch my eye for sure now. But back in the day, mm-hmm. This was a really grand, large estate.
It was. This was originally 224 acres.
Oh, wow.
And bought and purchased in, 1853. And at the time, of course, you know, there wasn't anything there, but George Willison Adams, he purchased that land and he built this house of his dreams. And he was the wealthiest man in the county, or at least the northern part of the county. And so he built it in order to show his wealth and his power, if you will. Back in the day, you showed your wealth. And this is a 29-room Italianate style brick house. And it has a basement. It has its main floor, a second floor, which is basically the family living area. It also had has a ballroom, which is U-shaped. In the center of that, there's a stairway that leads up to the Belvedere. And connected to the back of the house is a two-story section of the house. And that is the servant's side, the servant's quarters. And these were paid employees, but it has like eight rooms to that, four down, four up. And of course, one of them is the kitchen. So it's quite large. There's a gentleman's parlor downstairs. It's the fanciest room of the whole house, and that's where George did his business. He would, of course, want to impress people with his wealth, so you would be met there to kind of look at the grandeur of the home. And these are like 15-foot tall ceilings. There's a formal dining room. George himself had a bedroom on the bottom floor, on the first floor, and he had his own bathroom. Now, this was built and finished in 1856, and at the time, it was the first house in Ohio that had indoor plumbing with hot and cold running water.
You know? That's incredible for 1856.
Yes. Directly above his room is his wife's room, and she also had her own bathroom with hot and cold running water.
Now, Mr. Adams was an interesting person because I was reading about him, and he was actually from Virginia, and his family was his dad was a plantation owner, but he disagreed Correct. With that, and so he freed they freed their slaves, or did Mr. Adams have some of his own and he freed them?
It's a little complicated because his father's name was also George, but it was George Beale Adams. And he was a Revolutionary War soldier. And where Prospect Place is now located in Ohio, that is called the United States Military District. And that was land that was used to help pay the soldiers for the revolution. The United States was young and it was cash poor, but it was land rich. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically what they offered George Beale Adams, the father. And so when he was 60 years old, he decided he was going to move the whole family up to Ohio. So he did that, and he bought 160 acres on the other side of the river from Prospect Place, and he paid $2 an acre for it. And I wish I could do that now.
$2.
But that's where he moved his entire family. Most of them were grown, with an exception of about four or five younger children that he had. And our George, which is George Willison Adams, he was 9 years old, and he was the youngest out of 13. And when the whole family went to Ohio, that's where he grew up, basically, was in that 160 acres. And he learned how to farm from his father. And he also started buying property in Ohio. And that was part of his prosperity, was buying property and then having it rented out and allowing other farmers to farm and taking a profit from that.
Not only is this building on the National Register of Historic Places, but it's also on the Ohio Underground Railroad Association's list of underground railroad sites.
Yes.
So the people who actually worked for George W. Adams, he paid those people. They were employees,
yes.
Correct?
they were employees. They would have had a cook, a stable boy, someone to help the wife get dressed, a nanny even, multiple employees. George also built a mill on the canal. He and his brother Edward, they built a mill, a flour mill, and that was really where he got the most of his money and his prosperity was from that mill. It was so successful, about 10 years later, they built a second one right beside it in order to handle all the volume of grain that they had to grind. And so George eventually had a third mill. I mean, this guy could do no wrong. He knew a good deal when he heard it. Not only that, but let's see, he formed a company, and they were going to build a bridge across the river. And he had some backers, and backers did what they do best. They backed out of the deal. Yeah. And so he built the bridge across the Muskingum River himself to the tune of $30,000.
Wow, a lot of money.
That was a lot of money. He used it as a toll bridge, though, and got some of that money back, of course.
Good for him.
Very smart. You know, I'm thinking, George, you have family on the other side of the river. Are you really going to make them pay to get across the bridge?
Maybe family got to use it for free, but it was those people who backed out of backing him. They paid
right.
extra.
I don't know. Maybe they got a family discount, you know?
Maybe that's it.
So the other things that George did, he also had stores where he would either go to New York or other places and have items brought in, because behind the mills, he had a boarding house. And so his employees lived there to work on the mill. And so he had stores, like a company store, in order to sell things to his employees that they needed. But then again, of course, he had a profit from that, too.
Smart
so
man.
Very, very smart man. He also was a director for two of the railroads that crossed through the area. So he was on the board of directors for the Steubenville, Indiana Railroad. And then he was also a director for the Muskingum Valley, Zanesville, Wilmington Railroad.
One really interesting thing right off the bat about this house is they built the house, and was it completed and then possible arson and the house burned down?
Well, it was only a fourth of the way completed. It wasn't totally finished. And at the time, George and his second wife and his three daughters from the first marriage, they lived almost across the street, and they could watch it pretty much grow out of a cornfield. It was only a fourth of the way finished when it did catch fire. And of course, this was 1855, and that's, you know, that makes you think there wasn't any electricity, so it wasn't that started it. And you'd mentioned George Blackburn earlier. He is a nefarious character in this story. And he was like a ne'er-do-well criminal. He would rob from people and break into their homes and things like that. He did get arrested, and he was sent to the penitentiary, but it wasn't for setting fire to the house. It was for other crimes. I think he even shot the sheriff, and I know the song that's going through your mind right now.
Based on him.
Right. So he was in the Ohio State Reformatory in Columbus. And because he was a bricklayer on that house and other properties, they put him to work building the Ohio State Reformatory while he was a prisoner, which was a bad thing because he knew all the ins and outs of prison.
What a stupid idea.
And, yeah. So he did a Shawshank Redemption thing and went out through the sewer and escaped. but he was caught right away and sent back to prison. He did escape another time when he was elderly, and he was like on trusted detail working outside of the prison. And he just put his tools down and walked off. But of course, they caught him again and brought him back to the prison. He did live the remainder of his life in prison. When he died, his own daughter was so ashamed of him, she wouldn't give her rightful name to pick up his remains. So she was definitely embarrassed of him. He gave an interview late in life, and he claimed to have set fire to the mansion in order to make more work for himself. So he was never charged with that, but he did admit to it during an interview. So we believe him to be true to that because, you know, nobody was ever arrested or anything for the arson.
And he had no problem committing crimes. So
no, he didn't. he was pretty proud of him, but he always committed crimes with other accomplices. And when they'd get caught, he'd say, "Oh, it wasn't me. It was them."
It was them, yeah.
So he wasn't a very good friend, but he wasn't a very good criminal either.
So after Mr. Adams passed away, the house then, Prospect Place, went to his daughter?
Well, I mentioned a first wife. The first wife and George had five children. They had Edward and Anna and Mary and Elizabeth and a baby named George. There's so many Georges in this story.
There are.
But prior to him buying the property on October 28th, which was also his wife, Clarissa, it was her 28th birthday, and that baby, George, passed away on her birthday.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
and then
tragic.
In April of 53, then Clarissa herself passed away, and then 2 weeks later, that older son, Edward, passed away too, and he was like, I don't know, 6 years old. So he was left, George was left with three very young daughters. And so 2 years later, as he's building Prospect Place, he meets another young lady, and both of these young ladies were more than 20 years younger than him. but, you know,
but men of wealth who had children in that time, they would have never stayed single for long. You know, he needed help.
He did. Three young girls to raise. And I know he had a lot of family that helped him, but still, they needed a solid mother. So he married again to Mary Jane Robinson. And so that's who was living with him and his three children as they watched the house grow. But then when they moved in, Mary Jane had children. She had six. And she had... the first one was Sophia, and then she had James, and John Jay, and Charles, and Florence. The baby's name was Florence, and there was also Jessie, a girl. And so when you ask, did it go to the son first, the oldest son, James, he was 20 years old when George passed away. And 2 days later, he also died.
My goodness, there was a lot of tragedy in this involved with this house.
A lot, yes. So we're not certain, but we think that he may have died by suicide. And we think that because I was able to read a journal from one of George's friends that lived over by the mill. And his name was Horace Smith, and he would write a one-line journal every single day of his life for like 50 years. It was an incredible thing that he did. And it was just one lines like, you know, oh, it snowed today, or, you know, we're harvesting wheat today, or butchering hogs, or something like that. But he wrote about different things about his family, but he was friends with George, and those three daughters ran around with his kids. So they're all, you know, pretty connected. And so when I was able to read this journal, I wanted to see if he wrote anything about George Adams when he passed away. So I went to that date, August 31st of 1879, and he definitely did. He wrote, "George W. Adams passed at 7 a.m. From a consumptive chill."
Mm.
And so that was August 31st. And like I said, 2 days later, his oldest son passed away. And reading through all of this journal, Horace would identify who passed away, what from, that kind of thing. But for James, James is the only one that he didn't say anything about how he died. So
makes you wonder.
My my background is mental health, and you know, I work with individuals with depression and so forth, and so that's why I'm kind of thinking, for a young, healthy man, you know, to die that young, that quickly. One big thing in this area, it's very low. There's a lot of water everywhere. I already told you about the river, and there was a canal, and a lot of ponds. In that journal, he wrote a lot about people getting sick from what they call ague. And all that is malaria. There's a lot of mosquitoes here. Could have been something like that. I mean, it was August. And then, of course, September was when the sun died 2 days later. So it could have been something like that. But I think Horace would have written in his journal about the cause of it. And suicide was something that nobody talked about. James would have inherited the house, but since he had passed, the oldest daughter from the first family, her name was Anna. And so this was a house, you know, built for her and her sisters, and she didn't want to lose it. But that second wife, Mary Jane, wanted to go to Zanesville. So she took her inheritance and built a house in Zanesville, about 20 miles south of here, and took her remaining children. And so they moved, and you know, there's the house. So Anna, of course, couldn't run it by herself. So she marries the boy next door. And of course, it's a wealthy family. And he's like 5 years younger than her. And she was in her early 30s. And so they married and remained in the house with the second sister, Mary. She lived there and she never married.
This is a story I found really fascinating. So Anna's husband, they said he kind of spent quite a bit of money on renovations and things. But then at some point, he just disappears.
Yeah. He's the second villain of this story. George Blackburn, of course, was the first one. But William Cox, and I hate to say it, but that name fits him. But anyways, he was the boy next door. And of course, he comes from a well-to-do family. They had acreage too, but nobody had as much as George. George and his brother had 14,000 acres of land. But this boy next door, his family had about 1,000 acres. And so they were well-to-do. And their home was called Riversdale. And so he and Anna married, but he was nothing like George. I mean, George could touch something and it would turn to gold. But William, he tried lots of things to make money, but he was never very successful at all. And what happened was in 1886, the barn at Prospect Place burnt down. So I think that was like the first sign of his bad luck, if you will. The insurance paid like $4,000 for it. And so he rebuilt the barn, which stands today, in 1886. Other things that happened later was he overspent a lot of things, and in purchasing things from the stores and so forth, and selling his crops and all that. Anyways, he spent so much money that he got them into debt to the tune of about, in our day and age, it would be several millions of dollars. Yeah. So he was going to have to auction off some property in order to pay off that debt. So the day the auction comes and everybody is organized, you know, to go to this auction, but he doesn't show up and they can't have the auction without him. So he disappears. He was seen in Columbus, Ohio, which is 60 miles from here, at a hotel checking in with another man, but he wouldn't allow them to take that man's name. So he was being very secretive. And then somebody thought they saw him out in Denver, but it wasn't him. And then Anna's own cousin from here was in San Francisco, and she did see him on a street, and she called to him and she said, "William, William," and she waved, you know, and he looked behind them over his shoulder and saw that it was, you know, the cousin. And so he just started walking faster, and he dodged into a cigar store, and he went in the front door and out the back door into the alley and disappeared. Nobody has ever found him.
It'd be one thing if she just saw his doppelganger and he would have said, "I'm so sorry." You know, you'd be confused if somebody stopped you. You wouldn't start hiding from them, escaping that person. Exactly. It makes him seem kind of guilty then. And absolutely. There was on your website, there's a theory about what might have happened to him in San Francisco.
Yes, it could be that he stayed there in San Francisco and created a new life. And because we all know history, the 1906 earthquake happened in San Francisco, he could have perished in that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking if he was in San Francisco, you know, he could create a whole new identity.
Oh, yeah. Especially back then. You know,
back then, there wasn't credit cards or driver's licenses or anything like that. So, you know, he could have died there and nobody knew it, you know, because, you know, he may have went by a different name. He may have traveled the coast. He may have gone abroad from there. You know, the possibilities are endless, really.
Now, did Anna end up staying? She stayed in the house for quite a while after on her own.
She and William had a son named George, because everybody's named
they
George. Named
they liked that name.
They sure did. So they remained there. They, of course, hired detectives, but, you know, William was never found. George went to college and became an engineer and moved down south to Alabama, I believe. And so Anna and the sister Mary remained there in the house until Anna died in 1926. And so at that time, George Cox, her son, came back to Ohio, and he decided to rent the house out. And so like the back half where the servant side is, he would rent that out for several years from about her death, 1926, until 1969.
Mm.
He took the sister Mary down to Alabama, and that's where she died and is buried. She lived until 1941. That third sister I mentioned, Elizabeth, she lived to be 105.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she died in 1955. And so I've actually had people come to me on some of the tours and say they used to live here when it was a rental. I have this one little girl, and we have a picture of her in the house even, and she always comes up and says, "I used to live there from 1944 to 1949. And she even gave me photographs of her sister who got married at Prospect Place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's many other families that did rent the Prospect Place, but she's just very special. And so she comes every year and looks at the house again.
And it ended up sitting empty for a long time, didn't it?
It did. After 1969, that was when it was sold to the Cox Gravel Company. But that Cox name, that's no relation to William Cox. And so they are the ones who actually put it on the National Registry of Historic Places. And, of course, it's a gravel company. And so they dug out a lot of the property next to us. So now we kind of sit on a little knoll. And so it's wonderful. We just came across the paperwork for that application last week, in fact. So it's very timely that you ask. Yeah. So they had it, and they just kind of kept the house boarded up. In 1976, that was about the time that they were making that application for the historic site. And so they did open it up to the public, and there was newspaper articles and so forth about that. And so there's a few photographs even of how upstairs in the ballroom, the plaster was still there. But by then, people had started to, kids basically, you know, started breaking into it. And there's graffiti all over the walls. And It became a party house, and a lot of people would break in. Kids would dare each other, you know, to break in, go through the haunted house, basically. Gosh, when it was being cleaned up, they were taking shovels full of that plaster that had come down, but it was all sprinkled with needles and beer cans. And yeah, there's still a lot of graffiti upstairs. So we're kind of debating whether we should, you know, cover over that or leave it, because it is part of its history.
It is, really, because it did mm-hmm. fall into extreme disrepair.
Yes, it did. So much so that in 1988, a local businessman, Dave Longaberger of Longaberger Baskets, he lived there. He grew up there. And so he would drive by all the time and see this magnificent house. He decided in 1988, he was going to save it from the wrecking ball. And so he purchased it and he did some work on it. He had a construction company aside from the baskets. And so they started working on it. They put a new roof on it. He redid all of the windows because, you know, how little boys love to throw rocks. So all new windows. And then the Belvedere that sits on top, it was starting to sink. And so they put supports under that, and it's now, you know, usable. You can go up into that space and look as far as you can see, and that's how much land George Adams owned. But yeah, it's Dave Longaberger was one of those saviors that saved it.
So at some point, the GW, all of a sudden I can't think of the GW Adams Educational Center. That's what I wanted to say.
It's a mouthful.
So the GW Adams Educational Center, that's kind of like the company who came in to restore and save the building, correct?
Yes and no.
Okay.
After Dave Longaberger owned it, he got sick and passed away, and his daughters sold it to another person named George.
No. I think we're on the 20th George of this story.
We are. His name was George Jeffrey Adams, and he purchased the house, or his friend did, actually, and he and his friend lived there, and that was, the intent was to turn it into, first of all, maybe a bed and breakfast, but 9/11 happened at the time,
oh.
So that idea kind of scratched, but they did turn it into the educational center, and we've been giving school tours and historic tours ever since. But in 2017, he left due to ill health and so forth. And so that was when the current board took over. And, you know, we're working hard to make it better.
How is restoration going on it now?
Very slow.
Those older buildings.
Absolutely. It's a nonprofit, and we obviously we take donations. We have a small gift shop. We also do the overnight investigations, and that's basically our biggest moneymaker. And it's very expensive to run the house mm-hmm. as the treasurer. I'm paying the electric bill to the tune of $800 a month, so it's quite expensive. The renovations, we've had estimates, and it's into the millions of dollars to get it back to somewhat of what it used to be. I mean, this house had marble fireplaces, which we will never be able to replace. We do have one room called the library on the first floor that is a smaller room, but it has been redone. It's newly painted. It looks wonderful. It still needs the floor worked on and, of course, a fireplace. But that's our best example of how we're using our money that we get, because we are a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And so every dime helps.
Absolutely. And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Amy Green about the Haunted Prospect Place Estate. For more information, visit their website at gwacenter.org. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then you could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.